So then the final instruction is the basic meditation instruction, was just rest in the natural state, rest in that open state. Sit down with a sense of opening, and then thoughts arise, just let them dissolve back into the space. Keep coming back to the immediacy of your experience. And of course, this is really tough because our experience is much more of we sit down and it's just like being in the middle of the traffic jam. Or in the middle of Grand Central Station, it's just a lot of noise. And there isn't much, as someone said, the only time I really meditate is at the end when they ring that gong. And it wakes me up out of, you know, a 30-minute period of space out. And then I come back for this moment when the bell rings and there's this moment of open mind. Well, all I can say is that's good enough. My first experience of what is called in this big fancy word, absolute bodhicitta, or the absolute, or this openness, or gap, or space, was sitting and meditating in a hall with a fan that was going all the time. So the fan was always going, yeah, all the time. But we were sitting for a month, and you just didn't even hear it anymore. But I remember there were teachings. When I teach Tonglen, it begins with saying a flash of absolute bodhicitta, just a flash of space. That's the initial instruction. And basically, I didn't have a clue what that meant, which I'm sure many of us here don't have a clue what that means. What does it mean, a flash of absolute bodhicitta? But I was wondering, and my meditation wasn't showing me much because I was just sitting there and it was just talk. But I was sitting one day and the fan was going as usual. Yeah. And all of a sudden someone turned it off. So it was like this. Yeah. And I said, that's it. Gap. Space. Openness. It was my first hit that there's some kind of like break. So there's two stories on this. One is one that is told by a hospice worker. He was talking about a woman that was dying in the hospice. She was an 80-year-old woman, and she had no interest in Buddhism or meditation, anything like this. This was a hospice in San Francisco that is run by the San Francisco Zen Center. But it's not that only Buddhists go there by any means. It's not for Buddhists, it's just Buddhist people working there, some of them. In any case, there was this woman, and she was really tough case, but the thing about her was that she always wanted people to be completely honest with her and completely straightforward with her, and she wouldn't buy anything less. And she tended to be rather hard on people, and this particular man who was telling the story, he valued her a lot because she just smelled any kind of sentimentality or any kind of falseness. She sensed it, and she would just be kind of ruthless, go for the juggler, the people who were saying, can I help you? Do you need another blanket? Though he was saying at this point she was dying, actually, and this man said, are you cold? Can I give you another blanket? She's saying, of course I'm cold, I'm dying. But on the other hand, she was struggling because the end of her life, as death was approaching, she was struggling with her breathing, and it was becoming very labored, and she was very frightened. But all the usual ways of trying to comfort her weren't working, and he came in, and he just knew he had to be very genuine. He just said to her, would you like to struggle less? And she said, yes. And he said, well, in between the breath going in and the breath going out, there's a little place there that you can rest. Just try resting there. And then he said he just watched her face as the struggle and the terror and the pain in her face just started to dissolve just by finding that little space in between the in-breath and the out-breath and just resting there. And then she was able to die and just let go into that space. So basically this absolute instruction is very much instruction on how to die, how to live and how to die. When we reach the end of our lives, any of you who have been with people that are dying, and perhaps this is your profession and you see this all the time, or perhaps it's just been a friend or family member, or maybe you've never been with death. But if you spend any time around people that are dying, you know that the sense of identity of who you are, your sense of being a man or a woman, or being a professional person, or being a street person, or all these identities of winner or loser, these things just start to dissolve on you. And they don't have much significance, all these identities that we hold. So in a way, these are all instructions on letting go of these words by which we build up this very limited, extremely limited and crippling sense of identity. And when you're dying, as this identity begins to go and all the things you've clung to begin to go, there's a sense at the end of your life that everything is dissolving. And people experience that as either terrifying, completely terrifying, as if you were being pushed towards an abyss, or as completely liberating, dissolving back into the natural state. And you don't have to be a Buddhist, you don't have to even have meditated. It depends how you've lived your life, though. If you've spent your life pushing against pain and fear and just trying to run from it, you can pretend your whole life that you can get away from these things. But at the moment of your death, you can't get away from it. Things just start to dissolve. And you could have been training your whole life in just turning towards what is painful and fearful. It's because basically underlying everything that we find painful and fearful, the real suffering is this denial of groundlessness, that we don't want to go near the fact that things are not exactly what they seem. Things are much more unique, unpredictable, and precious than we ever allow ourselves to experience. So another story, a similar one, in terms of rest in the nature of Alaya, or all of these slogans actually, is Sogyal Rinpoche tells a story of his teacher, Chöki Lodro. And he said that Chöki Lodro Rinpoche had a student who came from an Indian tradition, where in the tradition you always ask the teacher the same question over and over again. So this student was always asking Chöki Lodro, how should I meditate? And because Chöki Lodro didn't come from this tradition where you got asked over and over, he was beginning to find it very irritating. Because literally this is years and years, you know, the guy keeps always asking him the one question. Chöki Lodro, just one time he just looked at this man and he said, I'll tell you how to meditate. And he said it in such a way as to say, and this is the last time. Don't ask this question again. So he said, have you ever noticed that between one thought and the next thought there's a little gap? And the man who had been meditating for some time, he said, oh yes, I have experienced that. And so Chöki Lodro said, make that gap bigger. The thing about this that's interesting, though, is really, even though all of this sounds as if we're trying to get rid of thoughts, we're not really trying to get rid of thoughts, but to see the illusory nature of thoughts, to not be hooked by thoughts, to not be captured by thoughts, to not identify with the thoughts. So this is instruction, as is the Shamatha Vipassana, on letting go, giving ourselves a break, opening up, just not being so grasping and so stuck in believing everything we tell ourselves moment after moment after moment, some sense of opening.